This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Last Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we are talking about A Quiet Place Day One.
Yes, we've only talked about a few horror films on the podcast, but I don't think we ever talked about A Quiet Place in full detail or gave our thoughts on it. So I remember there was this huge surge of these type of films that if you see the creature, you die, or if you make a sound, you die. And that was a really interesting concept in that time, but now it's kind of gotten old. Like, what's the longevity of this? Like, how can they make more of this? And now we've got more of the Quiet Place franchise, and now they're trying to make a whole world around it, which is interesting, but I just feel a bit like cautious about it. Like, okay, how are they going to continue the story? Because they could have kept it as one movie.
Yeah, there are a lot of horror franchises. I think the longest running franchise in terms of a horror is Halloween, I want to say. And I'm not a Halloween fan myself, but I know that the general consensus is that those films go up and down. But I think we've been lucky when it comes to The Quiet Place.
Yeah.
Because the first film is great, and I would say the second film is great as well. And I regard both those films on very equal standing, and it feels like a continuation of the first film. And you kind of think, yeah, no, why wouldn't we need this? So yes. You've got these really nice two films, and you know, maybe they'll make a third at some point. But I was really unsure about the idea to make a prequel. Day One, we already saw that at the beginning of A Quiet Place Part 2. So really, what do they really have to add to this? And I was massively unsure. But then I watched this film and I must say, I think they cooked.
Yeah, they cooked. I did not expect this film to be so introspective, very deep and layered. Like, the first two films, I thought they were just, okay, we're in for a horror time. Woohoo, let's see the creatures. By the way, I did not know they were called Death Angels.
Yeah, neither did Lupita Nyong'o, apparently. Yeah, if you've seen that interview clip.
She was like, what? Who are they? It's funny that the film don't mention them, but it's good to not know what it is. But now I just feel a bit like, oh, okay, they're called that then. All right.
It's a bit of an odd name. Like, it doesn't add anything. Because the question in the interview that she was asked was Demogorgons or Death Angels. And I think in Stranger Things, Demogorgons become creepy because the kids play Dungeons and Dragons, and because to the kids they name it after the scariest thing they can think of, and there's something spooky about that. But what even is a Death Angel? Like, what?
Death Angels. Like, I don't know why that screams 90s horror. I don't know why, it's just like that vibe to it. But when it comes to creatures that you don't know in the films, it's like, it's so interesting, you just don't know what to expect. The first two films, I thought they did pretty well with the creatures, and they do really interesting family dynamic. The character Regan, who is deaf, I really like how they've implemented sign language into the story to make it visual towards the audience and making it like deaf aware. But one thing that the film tries to go off a bit of a tangent was the use a cochlear implant, which I have, and they tried to use that for dramatic purposes in the film. I was like, okay, because that brings the assumption or the expectation of like cochlear implant sounds like this and people can use that for like for emergencies, whatever. There's like a death angel that comes out of nowhere, hey, quick, use your cochlear implant, and like, no, we want to make that noise. Everyone's gonna look at me like, you can do all this, and I'm like, no.
Yeah, monsters in horror are the most scary when you don't really know anything about them.
Yes.
A lot of, like, you know, I think about something like Signs or something like Arrival. And, you know, Arrival isn't really a horror, but they have those elements of mystery and about these creatures that you know nothing about. And in my opinion, and I think that both those films are spectacular, but they both have the same issue as soon as I actually see the alien, I kind of go, okay, it's no longer scary. It's no longer tense.
Where's the spooky?
Yeah, it's just a tangible thing. It's rare that you can get that so right. I think something like Alien does it amazingly. And even like Prometheus and Alien Covenant, we begin to unpeel the layers of of what the xenomorph actually is, where it came from, and that I don't mind, because that has a lot to say about evolution and human power and robots and some really cool stuff. But I was really happy in this film how they didn't decide to explain the death angels, because this is the most death angels we've ever seen. We see so many of them in like a stampede at points, and that's pretty terrifying to witness them just kind of barrel down a street and take out everything in their path. They are just as scary and unkillable as they were in the first film. You can't use your cochlear implants, you can't use your hearing aids to do that. They are just this unstoppable force, and I really enjoyed seeing that level again. But what struck me about this film is it's not really a horror. Obviously, there are still horror elements. There's a lot of thrilling sequences. There are a lot of times when I was on the edge of my seat and I did feel scared. Mm. But really, this film is, at its core, something more dramatic. A Quiet Place has always had a really good central theme of family and survival, but this film actually turning out to be really introspective and looking at humanity and the value of art and what do we as a species remember when we're gone? When the world is falling apart, what do you linger on? Do you linger on your own fear? Do you linger on survival? Or do you linger on the small moments, the half-played chess set, or the empty basketball court, or a bar that used to have music, or a magic trick, or a broken down church that people will still use for prayer and for shelter? There are so many moments in this film that made me really unexpectedly emotional.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if we might not have even mentioned this film on our 2024 release radar video. I really didn't care about this film. We had a slot this week and I said, hey, Quiet Place is out, let's do this in the podcast. I was not at all prepared for this to be so emotionally devastating.
Yeah, this film just felt like an existential journey towards, you know, the idea of like what happens at the end of life, you know, when you lose everything. This film is about characters finding their meaning when the world has gone into calamity, taken over by aliens, and how do you live again without music again? That's a really interesting concept when it comes to A Quiet Place. Like, there's so many meanings around us, but then it gets stripped away by a sound or something beautiful and it just goes away. And what we have here, we have Sam, who is a terminally ill woman, and she goes through a lot in this story, and she has a really hard time trying to connect with other people about her cancer, and it's about like how does she try to move on, essentially move on from this feeling, because the film is about survival. It's about survival, overcoming obstacles, overcoming monsters, but in reality it's about maintaining that little bit of life that the characters have and try to move on. Like the cat character, hell yeah, that was MVP. The goats,
brilliant. Every time I thought they were gonna dare to kill the cat, you know, the cat might be underwater for a sequence of time, and I'm like, don't you even try it. And they did. Yeah. And the cat would keep on just being the best. I really loved the decision to make Sam terminally ill, because there's so much interesting storytelling. From the very beginning, we know that she has just given up. She sees no point in anything, no point in trying to continue living. To put a character like that in a situation where everybody wants to survive is so fascinating, because she's never like, oh yes, I must get to shelter, I must get to an evacuation point. Her perspective is, I want to find my cat, I want to have a little trek, I want to get some pizza, I want to just enjoy some final moments. And that's so simple, but also throughout the narrative, you kind of get that opportunity for her to kind of live again a little bit. And the tragedy of it is that society collapses, modern medicine is out of the window, you know, hospitals are all down, her cancer is going to kill her. And she is completely in acceptance of that. There is no moment where we feel bad because she is going to die. I would say that we feel bad because she refuses to live. And that's where the sadness comes from. And I loved that. And Lupita Nyong'o is such a brilliant screen presence. I thought she was phenomenal. And you think about her career now, this is like her third leading in a horror adjacent kind of film. You've got Us, which is very much a horror, very much a thriller. You have Little Monsters, which is very much a comedy horror. And then you have this, which is horror drama. She plays very, very different roles in all of them. She's done the action hero. She's done the kind of like family woman. She's done the strange, creepy monster. And now she's just doing some, I mean, her range is off the charts. Every film that I can think of that she is in, I think she's just a brilliant, brilliant choice to lead this film, because you would think that somebody who has lost their way, who doesn't see the point in trying to survive, you would think that that would not make for an interesting protagonist. But she plays it in such a way that you immediately gravitate towards her struggle. And I feel like you can properly feel her feelings, and you kind of almost think to yourself, I do want to see her get that pizza. I don't really care if she does survive, but I want her to have that moment of happiness.
Yeah. And I think that is when performance is a key aspect, because again, this is about visual storytelling. Like, how do you not make a sound communicating towards other characters, and how do you plan around like finding shelter or all that? But in here, this is more about she wants to get pizza, and her performance is just magnificent, and you just feel you have so many connections towards her, that she likes music, pizza. She loves cats as well, so that's like a bonus. Like, how do you get an audience to connect with this character that she likes cats as well? And it's just wonderful when you get to see her connect with Joseph Quinn's character, and Eric was just lost, but he didn't want to be alone, and you get to see his perspective on her journey. She just wants to get pizza, but he's very unsure about, does he want to leave, even though he doesn't want to die alone in this world? He doesn't want to be alone. Again, that is such an interesting concept when it comes to like people have lost meaning, and then people try to lean on that as well. And you get to see his wonderful character arc in this story. Oh my God, like there's a spark that reignites inside of him towards the end of the film when he gets to help her on this journey, and he gets to see the beauty behind it. Like, oh my God, there's one scene that I absolutely love in an empty bar.
Yeah, I think this is a good chance to get into spoilers. I thought that whole scene in the bar was so magical and so tear-jerking.
Yeah, when he does a magic trick, it is such a beautiful moment between these two characters, and it's so human, this love for like performance or something else. And you get to see this subtext of what his life could have been if he wasn't working for a law firm or something, and he could be like a magician or something in this world of silence. So it's just beautiful, and I teared up, and it just felt like what a great arc for this character to really discover about himself. And then he does survive at the end of the film, which is brilliant, because it just makes up all of that, really, and it just shows this beautiful arc.
Yeah, it's all these little moments that kind of culminate, like where Eric might say to Sam, oh, what did your dad play on the piano? And that leads them to get, yeah, obviously they wanted to get pizza, but that leads them to go to a place that has so much personal meaning to her. And he gets the pizza, and even if it's not the exact pizza that she wants, he writes the name of the place that she wants it to be on the box, and they share it together, and it's such a beautiful moment. And his whole performance doing that magic trick, he truly comes, I mean, just like Lupita Nyong'o is a perfect choice for this film, Joseph Quinn is also perfect. I haven't seen him in anything. I haven't seen Stranger Things season 4. I watched one episode and I decided it wasn't for me, but particularly I thought that his character was a bit annoying. Very much that is the point. And so, you know, like when he was cast in Fantastic Four, I was like, all right, I don't know if this is the guy to play the Human Torch, but actually I watch him in this film and I think he is phenomenal. Just like Lupita Nyong'o, he's exactly what it needs to be. He is the one that you want to see survive, because he is the one who is broken, who is scared, he's young. He talks about how his parents are in Kent and he's in America. He never really wanted to be a lawyer, but this is kind of where his path, where his life has taken him, and it makes him feel really lost. And then to put that context behind him into an apocalyptic scenario, on one hand we have, what do we do when you have somebody who doesn't really want to live? And then for the other characters, what do we have when you have somebody who is lost, whose life is actually just on the other side of the world, just across the pond? I really, really liked that. I thought that was really moving. And that whole scene where he truly comes alive as this magician, you see that that's what he wanted to do. He mimes being in a crowd and like presenting to everyone. It was just so very, very emotional. And the bond those two characters make together with so little dialogue, so much of it is just in their facial expressions.
So much is said.
Even like when he just goes to find her the medication, small gestures gestures speak volumes in this film, and that is so very, very good. And as you said, like with the music, the final song of the film being the time that we get to hear what's in her headphones, and the time she gets to, for her final moments, she just gets to play music out loud, something that will become something that humanity won't really be able to do, living on the same land as the Death Angels. That's really, really beautiful. Like, I was so stunned by how heartbreaking that was and how moving that final gesture of playing this song was when it cuts to credits. So I was just sitting there just like, what? Are you telling me that A Quiet Place Day One is one of the best films I've seen all year? And that doesn't, that's not to say that this has been a bad year for films. That's saying that Quiet Place Day One is a spectacular, magnificent film.
Yes, and that ending just wrapped up so many things for me, and it just felt like that was a perfect ending, because I was thinking, how are they gonna end this movie? And ending with music was just a brilliant way to express her living again, essentially. Like, she's listening to the music out in the streets where she used to be, and that was just very poetic. She is fully accepting it, and she is where she needs to be.
And she gets to go back to her apartment. She gets to go back to where she grew up, where she came from. I'm just in such awe of how this film delivers all the Quiet Place things that you want. The tense sequences, like the bit where they're in the subway tunnel and the water's rising and the Death Angel is coming for them. That was really great. Or the bit where the cat is on a bit of scaffolding and Eric is trying to creep and get the cat, and there's also a little death. Or just any of those tense moments, just wonderful. And really well done. And Michael Sarnowski, the director, he brings all of that same tension and all that good stuff that you kind of come to the film for. But the reason why the film will stay in my mind is all those other things. Like when Sam wakes up briefly and just sees the street outside, and the sun is shining and there are people out and there are cars going by and the trees are healthy. And then she wakes up and it turns out that was a dream, and we see the same shot of the street, but it's desolate and it's broken. And for a lot of it, you do kind of see the city as almost like a wasteland, but we also get perspectives where the city is beautiful still in its ruined state. And I thought that was so good. But on the flip side of that, I do have one criticism, and this is just me. Anyone who listened to the podcast before may know where I'm gonna go with
this. This is me as well.
But when I was like, okay, Quiet Place prequel, what are we gonna do with this? Why do we need this, is what I thought. And then I see the casting announcements. Oh, Lupita Nyong'o, oh, she's great. Oh, Joseph Quinn, okay, fine. Jaimin Hyunsu. My guy, one of my favorite actors who shows up in so many things but is so often underutilized. And then I find out that he's in it. He's reprising his role from A Quiet Place Part 2, in which he does frighteningly little. He's back. And I thought to myself, okay, here we go. And you see him at the beginning, and there's this really, really, really beautiful moment. Well, I say beautiful, but he accidentally kills somebody in an effort to keep them quiet. And that really haunts him. And his son is visibly damaged by that. And you see him kind of sitting there, and he doesn't know what to do with himself. And you see that's going to affect him. See, this man who wants to protect his family, who wants to keep people safe, has just killed someone. What does that mean? I don't know what it means, because the film then doesn't show him until the very end. We've wasted Jaimin Hyunsu again. We did it again, John. How did they do it? Come on, man.
Okay.
Come on, man.
It's mad. Because what was so surprising, like, I saw him towards the end of the second film, right? You get to see him. He's like, oh my God, he's there. And then, spoilers, he dies. He gets killed, Jaimin Hyunsu, which is just sad. But then in this one, I was like, okay, great. We're going to see something. But no, we don't get any continuation, any interesting concept. Perhaps maybe there is some in the deleted scenes, but that doesn't take away the importance of this film, where that could have been explored very, very easily into this film. Like, they could have shown a couple scenes in that theater place, but no, it was just very sad. But what I gotta say is that the film's budget, it is $67 million, which
really,
yes, and I was like, wow, thank God we do have someone who is thinking about what to do, because nowadays we've got huge blockbusters that will just go to 200 million or 160 million. And it's just like, where does the money go?
It's like Netflix giving 300 million to the Russo brothers for a like, no film realistically should cost that much. You look at something like Indiana Jones last year. How did that film nearly cost 300 million for an Indiana Jones film? And I'm so happy actually that this film, what was it, 67, did you say, for this film?
67 million, yeah.
That's brilliant. That is so brilliant. And you can see all of that used so intelligently. Again, Michael Sarnowski does a really great job with the direction. That's really good to hear. They should have paid Jaimin Hansu more.
Yeah, please.
Yeah. Well, actually, I want to ask, what do you want to see the Quiet Place franchise do next? Are you happy with it as three films and then we're finished? Or do you want to do more prequels, more sequels?
To be really honest, I kind of want to see what they're going to do for the third film, but for that main story. It just feels like a very weird ending to the sequel, because they're just like, oh, we found a radio tower, we're going to use this, and just it works at the end. And just feel like, oh, really? That could have done something, and it could have saved Jaimin Hansu. Anyway,
in the third film, they make a time machine and they go back in time and they save Jaimin Hansu.
That would be great. But to be honest, I want to see that boat journey, how they get to the island, and like maybe see Jaimin Hansu as the main protagonist for this boat journey to get to this island for the sequel. Because again, he's a really interesting character, especially in this one. That could be a really interesting continuation to see his internal conflicts, you know, how is he going to survive? Yeah, I want to see a horror boat journey across waters. Like, maybe there are other species of that alien race that could potentially survive on water.
Yeah, or maybe there's a death angel on the boat, or they go near a
Pirates
bridge.
Pirates of the Caribbean! It could be Pirates of the Caribbean again! What? They could be on boats! Are you ready to get wet?
Are you afraid to get wet? There's so many places they can go, but I agree with you. Make a third film, complete the trilogy, wrap up that story, show the defeat of the Death Angels and the return to society. I think especially for the family of the main films, that would be a really nice way to do that, to have them finally be able to live their life again. However, as much as that would be cool, I really want a sequel to this. Start with Jaimin Hansu before the marionette show. Show what he went through during this film, and then give us the journey of him from the boat to the island.
Yes.
You're right. That is the story that I think is compelling.
Yeah.
I mean, this film's made a lot of money. Like, already in its opening weekend, it made over 100 million. And that's the biggest opening for the franchise so far. So I do think that, this film will do well. And if there is a story to tell, Michael Sarnowski, John Krasinski, I think they will probably endeavor to make a fourth film, be it a sequel to this or a sequel to part two. So yeah, Quiet Place Day One, what are you going to give it out of 10?
I'm going to give it a 9. This is
a great film. I would be surprised, because currently this is showing up in my top 5. I'll be surprised if this doesn't make it to the final count of the year.
Yeah, for sure. I think this is definitely in my top 5, because it just left me like, wow, that was pretty impactful, that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think they're going to do like a Quiet Place Day 2?
I'm really excited for Quiet Place Day 17. That's the one that I think is going to be the heavy hitter of the franchise.
Do you think it's going to surpass Day 10?
Ooh. Difficult. I don't think it can surpass Day 10. Why are you smiling, John? Why are you laughing? This is very serious.
I'm sorry. I'm just
smiling. Oh, you were thinking about Day 6.
Oh,
That was a funny film. They made a comedy, like, in the middle of the franchise.
You know, like, when they got some really goofy noises for that movie? Oh, my God.
You know, Adam Sandler played the monster.
No way! Yeah. Adam Sandler. The guy who goes...
That's how he won an Oscar.
I'm waiting for Gangnam Style. You haven't seen that clip? Okay, no. So there's Adam Sandler that just goes like, I'm waiting for Gangnam Style.
What the hell? I don't even know. I don't know if you have any on right
now. If people
do
know, I'm all going crazy.
Okay, man. Thank you everybody for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you liked it, you can like and subscribe. If you want to see more, and if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week we're going to be doing Deadpool 2. We're going to be revisiting what I think is one of the best superhero sequels, if memory serves.
Yes.
So that is exciting, absolutely. And you can send us an email at ourstimefilmpod@gmail.com. We'll be recording next Saturday, so let us know your thoughts on Deadpool 2 by then, and we'll answer it right here on the podcast next week.
Yes, and you can follow us on Instagram at
Out of Time Film Pod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Asville, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to L. James Mayer for the excellent theme and Roland Phillips for vocals as always. And I think that's everything. Man, I can't wait for Quiet Place Day. Tom, quick, think of a number. Day
one. Oh, shit.
Oh,
damn it.
We have to end it. We have to move to embarrassed. Take what you give it.
You love him back.
Goodbye. Day two. That's it.
Yes, we did it.